This land is your land. This land is mine. From California to New York, from the redwood forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
I want everybody to know that we are extremely proud tonight to have with us, I'm sorry, I just have to adjust something here. We are extremely proud to have with us Congressman Dennis Kucinich. Congressman Kucinich was the youngest mayor of an American city, six-term congressman, and he's run twice for and currently running for a presidential candidate. Welcome to the People Speak, sir. It's a privilege to have you here with us tonight, Congressman Kucinich.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on the People Speak.
Congressman, let me ask you. First of all, there were a lot of joking about the fact that you were doing some. You were voting on a Congressional Hill tonight. And somebody mentioned that you were probably voting about this, the fact that President Bush's pants were too tight.
Well, tonight what Congress did was to vote down a resolution that was intended to have the president come to Congress before he would launch an attack against Iran. And that resolution that was intended to assert the power of Congress and to deflect even the possibility of another war, was voted down by a vote of 288-136. And, of course, I voted.
Really? Very interesting.
Yeah. Well, that ought to concern Americans, because the fact of the matter is that this Congress is not standing up to the president. And
well, let me ask you, and this is exactly what we've been talking about during the time before you arrived, sir. One of the things that I had read during my research was that Congress has voted over 30 times this year on the issue of Iraq and various issues and different aspects of the catastrophe that I call the catastrophe of Iraq. What has been done? We have 30 times that we have voted on Iraq. What has changed? And
nothing.
Why has nothing changed?
Because the real issue is the funding. And Congress goes through all these symbolic gestures and continues to fund the war. Congress has the power to end this war now, and I think the Democrats have a responsibility to step up to. They haven't done it. I'm a Democrat, but I'm not happy with my party's performance on this.
And that's how we feel. And I was saying that we oftentimes are discounting our own realities. We have this giant elephant in the living room, and we're trying to stuff it under the sofa, and nobody's willing to call it a giant elephant. There's this giant elephant called Iraq. Now, no matter what we say, Congressman, I think you'll agree with me that this presidential campaign really has to do with the war in Iraq and the future war in Iran and any other future engagements that we are planning.
Well, it has to do with oil. And we went to war for oil. Congress is promoting legislation that would facilitate the privatization of Iraq's oil. I believe that the reason why we're rattling sabers towards Iran is because of their oil. And I also think that, this was the reason U.S. tried to overthrow the government of Venezuela, because of oil. This really marks a very dangerous time in our country's history, because many of our founders warned of foreign entanglements, we are not only getting entangled, but we're sinking deep into a morass of oily motives and intentions, and really moving far away from our Constitution and the founding purposes of this country.
Congressman, this is something that has been of great concern to us. Again, you say that these issues of war, here we are, we're voting. What purpose, again, goes back? We voted out of the Iraq. We are, our Congress is stepping down, not stepping up to the plate. What do we as American citizens in this country, what is our obligation outside of making a an ordinary phone call? How can we take it to the next level, and what would your advice be to American people to have their voices be heard? Obviously, the Congress and the Senate cannot read the minds of Americans, that we have to make our voices known, but we're doing it. We're doing it by polls. We're doing it by starting grassroots radio broadcasts such as ours. We are blogging. We are calling. We are doing it all, and it's not making an impact, and it's not making a difference. What is the next step?
Let me tell you, my campaign, my candidacy, is really about giving the American people an opportunity to express how they feel about the direction of America, about their yearning for peace, for a government which is honest, a government which stands for the economic success of all the American people, a government which cares about the health of every American, a government that will work for peace. I mean, this is why I'm running. I mean, to give people an opportunity to elect a president they can call their own. And so my campaign is fueled by this kind of grassroots involvement and the fact that people can participate in a door-to-door effort. I mean, people can go to our website at Kucinich.us, have the opportunity to sign up and help us go one door to another across America, to wake the American people up, to let them know of the threat to our democracy, and to let them know that peace is possible, that we can create a new country, that we can have prosperity and end the spell of fear that has gripped this country. So, you know, there's plenty that can be done. We've only begun
Congress,
to tap our abilities.
One of the things that, you know, we're constantly hearing is what a disaster this has all been. You're telling us that we need to come together under this security blanket of peace, which I absolutely advocate with all of my heart. And then we're hearing that this is a fiasco. And if this is a fiasco that happened in Iraq, let me ask you this. Is Iraq really a failed operation? I don't see it as a failed operation. The oil companies have made more profits this year than at any other time in history. We have the different industrial complexes in Iraq that are being built that at the hands of Halliburton and many of the other corporations. If this is a failed project, why are these people making so much money? And if this is a failed project, if this is a disaster, if this is a quagmire, why are we going full force? Are we possibly that stupid as a society, as a government, as a Pentagon, that we have gone and completely a complete mess of this, or is this on target? I believe
target. Well, first of all, there's two reasons to go after oil. One is to be able to grab it and to sell it, and another one is to be able to grab it and to not sell it. If you keep oil off the market, then you can claim that there's a restriction of supply. The demand is constant. If supply is constricted, then the price goes up. And so, I don't think we can rule out the possibility that holding Iraq back from full production may have had some impact. But the international oil companies, at this point, are primed to be in a position of having control over a large share of the minimum 115 billion to as much as 300 billion barrels of oil in Iraq, which could put them in a position of either profiting mightily from their privatized sales or from profiting by keeping the oil supplies of Iraq off the market.
Paul Bremer, Congressman, the U.S. Administrator at one time of the Iraqi occupation, made it clear when he declared that Iraq needs to accept foreign investment and privatization of its oil before a permanent government is put in charge in the country. In other words, what he's saying is democracies only welcome after the most important economic decisions for the future of the Iraqis have been decided for them by the United States. How the Iraqi occupation embedded U.S. corporations, and this is something that it was primal to what happened there and what is currently happening, the takeover. The U.S. corporations are being embedded into the Iraqi economy. So to me, I repeat, I think that this has actually been a very lucrative, very profitable, very
Well, it's been profitable for a lot of contractors. There's no question about that. Yeah, it's been profitable for a lot of contractors.
Exactly.
You know, there's tens of thousands of contractors in Iraq right now, and they're profiting on the misery of the Iraqi people. There's a huge foreign army, an army of soldiers of fortune in Iraq right now, which do not have the same rules which the U.S. military must follow. It's thought that maybe this is the army that would remain once the U.S. leaves, which means that the war will not soon cease. I believe that we need to stop the war now by Congress telling the administration no more funds. This Congress seems reluctant to do that, but that's the real power that Congress has here. Congress can just say, look, we're not going to give you any more money. And I've come up with a plan embodied in H.R. 1234 that would provide not only the funds be cut off, but the money that's in the pipeline be used to bring the troops home, set up a simultaneous process of working with the world community to develop a peacekeeping and security force, which would come in as the United States leaves. The occupation by the U.S. is fueling the insurgency. We must leave that country in order to really give it any hope of peace.
You know, Congressman, yesterday we had David Swanson on our show, and he went through a very, it was more like a university class 101 on impeachment, and helped many of our listeners to understand the concept of impeachment, how it worked, what it meant to the American people. You had at one time said that you would make your serious and purposeful approach to impeachment known. Can you do that for us this evening?
Well, sure. I mean, I've introduced legislation, H.R. House Resolution 1234, that provides for the impeachment of the vice president and on three counts. One, that he lied to create a cause of war, falsely claiming that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction, falsely claiming that Iraq had a role with al-Qaeda in 9/11, and trying to build a case for war against Iran. And so for those reasons, the vice president has violated his constitutional oath to safeguard and protect the laws of this country. In addition to that, you know, the questions remain about the conduct of the president. I think that the people of this country are entitled to leaders who will support the Constitution of the United States and who take it as a sacred text, that is founding document that lays out a vision of a government of the people and a government of honesty and integrity. And so I'd move forward with that impeachment process of the vice president. We have three other members of Congress have joined me on that in the last couple of weeks, and I fully expect that as the American people speak to their member of Congress, as each constituency is heard from, that there'll be many more members joining.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I believe for myself, and I know that I speak for many Americans, when we say that the standard for the presidency has been severely compromised by President Bush. And this sometimes I have often joked about, but I absolutely believe that I am serious. When I say, how dare we elect a president that can't even come up to the mandatory requirement, at least to me, a mandatory requirement of the presidency of the greatest nation on earth, is that he be able to speak the language. Our president has repeatedly proven he can't even do that. And that is a frightening concept, sir. And as Americans, we are not willing, no matter who takes office, no matter who steps into that position, we are going to be right there watching, and we cannot afford to have the presidency compromised any further than this. It, you know, we talk about security, Congressman, and this is something that I would like you to respond to. Look at Rudy Giuliani. His ace in the hole as far as his campaign is his fear-mongering that this issue of terrorism. And for me, this kind of mentality just, again, chips away at the credibility. If we have a president that cannot even articulate to the point that he is understood and he isn't a laughingstock, we have people that are fear-mongering, doesn't that in itself chip away at the security of our nation?
No question about it. I mean, you can't walk in faith in a democracy and have fear at the same time. Fear is anathema to our hopes for the future. Fear paralyzes us, causes faulty judgment, leads us to accept worse as the better reason. Fear deprives us of our birthright as Americans to connect with Francis Scott Key's the deeper meaning of the Star-Spangled Banner, land of the free, home of the brave. We need to, and as president, I intend to help the American people reclaim their
question. My co-host wanted me to ask you a question, and he said, I wonder, does Congressman Kucinich believe that he can become president of this country?
Absolutely.
That he can win?
Absolutely. I wouldn't run if I didn't think I could win, and I believe that the reason why I can win is that I offer such a dramatic alternative to the way things are now. I offer the potential of real change, of a government that has integrity, a government that is peaceful, a government that takes care of its people's basic needs for jobs, health care, education, retirement security, housing, a cleaner environment. I mean, these practical aspirations that people have need to be addressed, but they cannot be addressed by a government that's on the warpath. They cannot be addressed by a government that is borrowing money from China to fight a war in Baghdad, by a government that's preparing for a war against Iran, by a government that's stirring up the hostilities between the United States and Russia, by a government that spies on its people, by a government that believes in torture and in suspension of basic constitutional principles. So what I intend to do is to call forth that impulse that Americans have to be great again and to have a sense of oneness again. Yes,
which
I can
is vital. Let me ask you, Congressman, again. And when I ask you these questions, I'm curious not for myself, but we talk to each other in the community. We hear things as politically active people. We're not just sitting around having coffee or watching the newest of reality flicks on television. We are concerned. We are genuinely. You and Mike Gravel have had a much more moderate approach to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Has that hurt you with the strongest lobby in the nation, AIPAC? And how do you, as moderates, how do you, if you are hurt by these grandiose and overbloated lobbyists and lobbies, how do you get funded?
I raised $13 million in the last presidential election by reaching out to the people
Bravo.
Of America, who went to my website at kucinich.us and made a contribution. I mean, that's the way you get honest government. That's the way you get government that works for people, by having a lot of people involved in funding a campaign. And that's, you know, that's how I did it the last time. Now, peace in the Middle East is an essential part of a path towards peace in the world. And I believe that it's important for America to have a president who's even-handed, who's ready to move in a complex world in a way that can simultaneously understand the existential fears of Israelis and at the same time speak to the imperative of protecting the human rights of Palestinians. You know, this is something that it's time to have that kind of leadership. And I think people will respond to leadership which does not polarize, which does not pit people against one another, but which understands the fears and the pain that people have doesn't capitalize on it, but finds a way to help people reconcile with each other. We're not meant to descend into a hellish nightmare. We are meant for bigger and better things, and we're meant for unity, and we need leaders that can show the path to unity, and that's what I'm prepared to do. I've spent my life preparing to do that.
Well, bravo to that statement. Another statement that you made, sir, was that we needed a president to unify, to bring the country to unity again. It's a beautiful thought. But we as a nation have never been more divided, Congressman. As a world, we have never been more divided than the day that President George W. Bush said that you are either with us or you are with the terrorist. At that point, he established the demarcation lines, the lines between what he considered the axis of evil and the axis of good. How can we repair that? How can we soften and blend in that line? How can we merge that line again after such anger, so many deaths, so many senseless tragedies have taken place? Even here, the American people, look at how many soldiers we've lost. How do we do that?
I think we do that by rejecting the type of thinking that leads to those policies. And that type of thinking, us versus them, whoever they are, is a direct path to war. We need thinking that sees the world as being interconnected and interdependent. And from that sense of unity, we bring and build international cooperation, which enables people to be able to find their commonalities and settle their differences in a cooperative way. It means, literally, we fulfill the biblical prophecy of beating swords into plowshares, spears into pruning hooks. We have to tap this capacity which we have to create human unity. People are longing for that. People don't want war. They don't want the separation. They don't want to be told that someone 10,000 miles away is their enemy. That's the way you make enemies. We have to go past that. And so I'm ready to meet that challenge, and I really appreciate a chance to be on your show. I'm going to have to go right now. I just came off the floor of the House to make sure I got this call. But I want you to know that I'm so grateful to have a chance to be on your show. And I look forward to another opportunity to speak with your listeners and to you. And I'm so grateful for for your thoughtfulness and for this discussion which you've given me a chance to have on your program.
Well, we really appreciate your coming. And before you go, just one brief comment on something that I thought was very powerful about your campaign. What you say is so much of campaigns is about saying what's wrong with America, not reconnecting with what's right about America. And this is what your campaign has promised.
Right.
You call it America Forward. And you say, share your story for us. And one important question that you asked, and I just wondered, how is this working? When was the time you felt the most courage, the most secure, the most peaceful, and the most loved in America recently? Have you gotten a lot of support for that particular?
Oh, we had tremendous response from all over the country. People are yearning to share their stories and to validate the power of their own existence and the relevancy of each individual life to the lives of all of us. Every person matters, and we have to act as though every person matters. We have to act as though each person in Iraq matters, each person in Iran matters. We have to mourn the deaths of innocent civilians everywhere. We need to show our capacity for compassion and empathy and for being able to support people who are suffering around the world. And we do that with a sense of love, not hate. And so I, again, am looking forward to bringing a whole new discussion to America. And thank you for giving me a chance to do it here.
Well, sir, thank you very much for being with us on the People Speak Radio. It has been a distinct honor and a privilege to have spoken with you. And we're looking forward to having you back. We are keeping tabs. And just so you know, when you do make it to the White House, sir, we're going to be right there watching every step.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. It's been a privilege, and good luck to you.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Well, there we we are, folks. That was Congressman Dennis Kucinich. He was very pressed for time, and it was very gracious of him on come to our show, and we are very pleased, and we are honored to have you guys. Our next guest will be Arnold Arnov, author of Iraq, The Logic of Withdrawal, which is a fascinating book, by the way, for those of you that haven't read it. And we're really proud to have, I mean, you know, I just got to tell you guys, this has been just a tremendous, tremendous week for our show. Archbishop Desmond Tutu, Congressman David Swanson, Congressman Dennis, and presidential candidate Dennis Kucinich. This is just growing by leaps and bounds, and we are very proud of the work that we have done here. We are very proud to help serve and bring these people so that you can hear the truth about what's going on. And I don't think we're holding back. I don't think we pull any punches. I think our questions are important and valuable. And I don't think that we're not coddling the issues in any of these areas. And I thank you all for being with us tonight. So thank you very much. Show's over, folks. We'll see you Tuesday night. It's been great.
One bright sunny morning, in the shadow of the big wall, by the rolling water, I saw my big ball, and they stood there hungry.